Ladies and gentlemen, a very good evening and a very warm welcome to a celebratory Red and Blue review. I hope you're all well. I hope you've all got over yesterday's double 1-0 wins that we're going to be talking about both games in a minute. Shortly, you're going to be joined by the panel. I can see you guys out in the chat already, so thank you for joining us, each and every one of you. Tom, Rob, Ian Roberts, Mark Callahan, Monty Alamein, Fergus, up here. Let me introduce you to my esteemed panel this evening, starting off with Ian Noble. Ian, how are you, mate?
Very good evening, Nick. I'm well. Good evening, everybody. Nice to see that normal service has been resumed and you are hosting the show this evening. So thank you.
Absolutely. And I'm working on all the rest of the shows for the remainder of the season. And I'll have some news on that for you, Ian, post-show, hopefully. Tim Richards, I hope you're well, mate. You okay?
Yes, thank you, Nick. Good to see you. Hello, everyone.
Proud to see you wearing your colours, boy. Well done, mate. You look fab, may I say.
I know.
I've been working on that one, and I'm here all week, guys. And Paul Gear, a.k.a. the real panel, how are you, mate?
I'm good, thank you, mate. Bit of a sore throat after yesterday's cheering, shouting and screaming, but, happy and basking in the glory today.
And I'll tell you now, let me start off by saying congratulations to each and every Palace fan that made that trip yesterday. I wasn't one of them. I was at home watching on live on TV. But you sounded great. There was a classic, I think it might have been Ian Woosnam put up a video on Twitter 3 or 4 minutes after the final whistle where the whole stadium had emptied, of course, except for you lot, okay? Singing glad all over, loud and proud. You did us proud as well. So, Ian?
Do you mean Matt Woosnam? Ian Woosnam was a golfer.
Yeah, Matt Woosnam, yeah. He knows who I mean. But, yeah, you're quite right, Matt Woosnam. He sounded great, and great to see the players celebrate with you at the end as well, which is very nice to see. And on the subject of the crowd that was here today, I'm going to start the show, ladies and gentlemen, in a little different way, if you don't mind. And I wanted to congratulate just the Palace fans and the Liverpool fans about how immaculate the minute silence was at the beginning of the game in recognition of the Hillsborough disaster, the 97 people that lost their lives. You could have heard a pin drop. Again, the Palace fans that attended, you should be proud of yourselves. You were brilliant. And in fairness to the Anfield crowd, they're pretty quiet at the best of times, but they were certainly quiet during that. Okay, so congratulations to everybody concerned. Very moving, very touching. Ian, go for it, mate.
Yeah, and Paul will bear me out on this. It was actually very moving to be in the crowd yesterday in the ground. And to stand with 60,000 people and not a word was said. Not a word was said. And it was just like, it was moving. And that photo was my photo, by the way. I'll take full credit for that. So I did take a couple of pictures right at the beginning of the minute silence. But it was brilliant. And it's right and proper that we remember those that lost their lives. Because, listen, those of us that are old enough will all remember where we were on that fateful day on the 15th of April, 1989. You can remember where you were. If you're at the Palace game, you remember they were home to, was it Portsmouth, Paul, I think, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah.
Nobody should go to football and never come back. So it was the right thing to do. And there was, right at the end of the minute, there was some Liverpool fan that shouted out justice, which I thought was a bit unnecessary. But that's their prerogative, I suppose. It's their club and they feel strongly about it. But, yeah, it's very moving to be in the ground.
On that one, I'll throw out the first stat of the night, Nick. I was reading the match report on the Liverpool website today and apparently, for everyone who was there, 60,090 was the attendance, which was the largest league attendance ever at Anfield.
Because they've opened the top tier of the
60,090, is that right?
Yeah.
And it's quite impressive, Paul, isn't it? The new ground, the new stand.
They've done really well, actually. I mean, it was always, it's one of the most cramped away ends anyway for fans at halftime, things like that. But they basically spread out to the road behind it now and they've got that huge, great area. So it's a lot more welcoming place and a lot more nicer place to be in, to be honest.
Yeah. I'm not sure about the queuing system when they didn't need a queuing system. I had to walk miles just to go in. But, you know, they've done a good job there, to be fair, you know.
Good stuff. Excellent. So I noticed on Twitter today that even the Liverpool fans were remarking on how respectful the Palace fans were during that minute silence as well. So really good, excellent stuff. ladies and gentlemen, don't forget you can find us on YouTube. Go to your podcast provider on Apple or Spotify or whatever it is. Just highlight Red and Blue Review and it will download. If you can't watch the live show, it will download straight to your Apple provider, your podcast provider the very next morning. It always does on mine, and I always quite enjoy listening back to them. You can follow us on Instagram as well, red_and_blue_review. Get on a like, share, follow. Our Tom Clark Samuel does great work on there, so good luck to him. Thank you for all your hard work. Right, we're going to start off not at the Anfield game. We're going to actually start off at the BBS Stadium in Sutton, if you don't mind. Because I've got a bit of a moan, boys. I've got a little bit of a moan. And, you know, whilst we're celebrating our club and everything that's great about it from yesterday, a little bit of a moan that the women are doing so fantastically well. And if any of the girls are out there watching this live, because I have just tweeted that we're going live, and if any of the ladies are out there live, please put your names in the chat because it will come up on screen in a minute. They have had such an incredible season. I'm so immensely proud of each and every one of them. And Laura has done a great job as a manager. Yet yesterday, bearing in mind they had the opportunity and indeed did cover top position in the league. Okay, they are top in the division and to be celebrated. Yet it wasn't covered anywhere, even on the Palace app. Okay, I went in there to look up the lineup. It wasn't even covered. You know, they've got a segment for men's, women's, under 21s, all that sort of stuff. Okay, I went into the women's ones, okay, and they hadn't even put lineup up there at half time. It was appalling. It wasn't covered by any radio commentary, unless Nigel was about to tell me differently. Last week away at Durham, I had to listen to Durham Hospital Radio live. Okay, Durham Hospital Radio live were the only people covering that game. Nice, jump in, mate.
It was on the Palace website. You could get the match centre. So you could see like a live text coming through.
So that's text. I'm talking about audio or visual. There's nothing like that, was it?
I think that's a league thing that we couldn't have it.
It is disappointing, I've got to say. I mean, and again, this week we know that they're away at Lewis at the Dripping Pan Stadium. Is that Sunday, Ian?
It clashes with our fixture, which is a real shame because I live down in East Sussex, as many will know, and I was really looking forward to going to that game. I'd already said to people locally, let's go and do that game and support the women, but I can't because I'll be a seller, so I can't be in two places at once. But there we are, it's a shame.
But it's the penultimate game, right, Lewis? And the penultimate game, you're right, but the last game of the season, Nigel, have you got the fixtures there? Have you?
No.
I need the date of the last fixture.
It's
28th, mate.
28th. Okay, so on the Sunday the 28th, after the Dallas and Fulham game, our ladies could be A, promoted and B, champions of that division on that day. I want to do everything in my power and Red and Blue Review's power or reach wherever you get to get as many people in that stadium. I mean, it would be lovely to get, you know, a regular 1,000 people at the BBS, and that's the last game of play at the BBS this season. The last home game is at Sellers Park on the 28th. It will be wonderful to get, you know, a decent crowd to see the girls get crowned champions. It was absolutely superb. As far as the game yesterday, obviously they're playing Birmingham City. 2 weeks on from their 5-star display on the road, Crystal Palace women hosted Birmingham City in their penultimate home game of the season. Laura Kaminski opted to stick with the same starting 11 that beat Durham with a top spot of the Women's Championship. Palace were rewarded with their persistence as Hugh found the breakthrough on the stroke of half-time. Some excellent individual work from Blanchard on the left saw her ease past Lucy Quinn before firing home to our Welsh striker to convert at the near post, giving us the lead at a break. Birmingham did push on, of course. I'm just looking at my notes. Yeah, Birmingham did push on, nearly equalised. We had a chance to double our lead late on where we had a penalty, but it was saved. Kaminski's now turned attention to the final away game of the season as they take on Lewis at the Dripping Pan. So in goal, Demi Lambourne, Rhea Percival, Amy Everett, Hayley Nolan, Felicity Gibbons, Alexia Potter, Shanice Hopcroft, Annabelle Blanchard, Molly Mae Sharp, she's had a great season, Izzy Atkinson, and of course, Elise Hughes. Now, let's not forget, Elise Hughes also scored twice for Wales in the week. So she's having not only the team having a good season, Elise is having a magnificent personal season as well. Come on, girls, you can do this. Let's get you up to the WSL where you truly belong. And it'll be a one. You know, if you look at those list of teams that we're on top of there, Charlton could, with the last fixtures, Charlton could actually scupper us getting promoted on against Lewis. Part of me doesn't want that to happen. I want it at Sellers Park. I want the Sellers Park absolutely rammo and with the whole fan base behind us. So come on, girls, bring it home. One, two more to do, and we'll get this finished. And a note to the regular guys in the background. If you look behind the players there, there's four or five guys that go home and away to the Palace fixtures. They travel the country with the ladies on the ladies' game, and they've just had that enormous flag made. I mean, one thing the Palace fans that do go to the ladies' fixtures that people should be aware of, they are synonymous with the amount of flags that they display home and away. It's like something like 20 flags that we put up in every ground across the season. That particular flag that Nigel was just showing, just give us a second, Tim, that particular flag that Nigel just showed you there, if those of you familiar with the Sutton United football ground will know there's a huge TV gantry above that stand. That thing is the width of the TV gantry, and fair play to Sutton United, who gave them absolute permission to have it made to size to fit that TV gantry. It's enormous. Yes, Tim?
Yeah, I've been speaking to Phil, who's the rep for the ladies' team, so we're hoping to get some of the players or a player to come on the show once their season's done. But Paul Bristow makes a very good point. It'd be good that the show after the Fulham game we do on a Monday, not the Sunday, because then that will be able to recover the ladies' game as well. So hopefully, potentially, yeah, get one of the players to come on after that.
Yeah, whether they're contracted to or not, I mean, I've actually been in touch with a couple of people from the club this week. I'm not certain that that's going to be actually possible because they're going to be covered by the same non-disclosure agreements as the men are. So, but be very good. Ladies and gentlemen, in YouTube land particular, or no, in Facebook land, I'm seeing an awful lot of people going through this evening as Facebook user. If you put a message in Facebook under Facebook user, there's two there on screen, evening all and evening gent. Could you just type in your name next to it so I can see who it is? Because I can't see your name because it's coming up for Facebook user. Paul.
Live update, Cole Palmer has just scored for Chelsea.
Oh, he's absolutely right. 13 minutes gone. Everton are losing. I'm delighted to announce. Thank you, mate. Well done. Good stuff. And didn't you want Palmer to score a hat-trick tonight?
Yeah, I do. Your fantasy team, mate. Yeah.
And true to form,
my screen, they still haven't scored yet for me. Oh, it just gone in. There you go. Brilliant. Yeah. Go on, get it, Carl Palmer.
Yeah, as we know, ladies and gentlemen, he's down in Sussex, and we know they're about 3 years behind him down in East Sussex on that technology. So anyway, Nigel, let's kick off with the lineup from Anfield yesterday, if you'd be so kind. Teresa said somebody's got their phone on vibrate. Boys, have any of you got your phone on vibrate? Please turn it off. And also talking about Teresa Baker out in Facebook land, YouTube land, pin your ears back, please. We are desperate for one match ticket for the Fulham away game for the wonderful NHS superstar that is Teresa Baker. If any of you got a spare ticket for that game, she has a ticket for the boat, but she doesn't have a match ticket. If anybody has a match ticket available, please contact me on all the socials or me personally, wherever you're. Just to let you know, I've come off Facebook, so you can't get hold of me on Facebook. But get hold of me, text me or whatever you can, and get a message to me somehow, and I can then pass it on to our Teresa. She works for the NHS. She's a sister at East Surrey Hospital, and she works tirelessly for her community. So please help me get her a ticket. There must be a match ticket for our lovely Teresa. We love her very much, and I know she's watching now. So the lineup. As you can see, Henderson in goal, Munoz, Klein, Anderson. Oh, my God. Are we going to be talking about Anderson? Lerma, Mitchell, Hughes. Are we going to be talking about young Walton? Olise, Eze, and Mateta. Okay, so there is your lineup. Ian, I need to break off for a second. I need to go and get a glass of water while you talk to everybody about what happened during the game, if you'd be so kind. Before you do, Ian, before you do, Paul, give me a stat from yesterday, please.
Okay, let's start with the start of the game. We went to the game, obviously no one was really that hopeful, and this particular stat didn't help. Apparently, well, it's true, it's not apparently, Jurgen Klopp has won more Premier League victories over Crystal Palace than any other team. So that's what we were on the end of them going to face. They've beaten us 13 times.
Oh, so not looking good.
13 times.
I hope you've got better stats than that, mate.
Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool. Yeah, Nick. Okay.
Wow.
There we go. Two changes from the lineup that faced Manchester City. Of course, Nathaniel Klein came in for Joel Ward, and Michael Olise, starting his first game for some weeks, came in for Jordan Ayew. And that was good news, Paul. I think on the ground at 1 o'clock, rather, when we got the team news through, Olise starting gives everyone a bit of a lift, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, we weren't sure on the way out whether he would start or not. I mean, there's a school of thought you want to save him for the next three games next week and sort of just blood him back in. But any Crystal Palace team with Michael Olise is a big improvement. So, yeah, when he was there, we were all good. It was a bit surprising to see Klein in the lineup as a centre-back, and I think we sort of put that down to we think he was probably a little bit quicker. Obviously, Liverpool very pacey up front, so obviously he got the nod over Joel Ward because he's probably a little bit pacier.
And, you know, we said he's probably one of the smallest centre-backs ever in the Premier League, but don't forget he's playing on the right of a three, and it was a sort of quasi right-back centre-back role, really, wasn't it? You know, he didn't have a lot of defending to do up against big players like you would think a traditional centre-back would, you know.
Yeah, and Liverpool aren't exactly known for lumping balls into the box. They play the ball on the floor, so you're not really after a big tall lump of a centre-back for that particular attack.
And we know they're dangerous down the left, Diaz and Robertson, you know, and we saw that. They did attack more down their left flank than their right flank, especially in the first half. And Munoz and Klein were doubling up some of the time on those players, and they needed to get a foot in, just to get that foot in and concede a corner, which happened quite a few times, of course. There's some of the stats going into the game. You know, we hadn't won in five games without a win, rather. One win in nine and only three wins in 20. It didn't look great, did it, really? Didn't feel great, you know. Those of us that go regularly, you know, we were there at Bournemouth for a horrible Tuesday night the other week. You know, we just lost at home to Manchester City, which is what you'd expect. But we played all right last week. So, you know, you take that positive into this one. And it was a bit of a free hit because, you know, you don't expect to win up there, really, notwithstanding the fact that we'd lost 13 times against Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool. And it was, you know, even with Olise back, you know, the expectations weren't high. But listen, we started so brightly. We started so brightly. Go on. 2-0. 2-0.
Cole Palmer again.
Oh, Cole Palmer, really?
Palmer again.
Fantastic. On. I don't mind being interrupted for that. That's amazing news. I have made a good decision in FPL for once. Oh, happy days. Right, so... We started so brightly, didn't we? Played some really good football. And wasn't it just so refreshing that the boys on Match of the Day were so positive about it all? I can't believe you just watched that. Oh, there we go. I watched it as well. There we are. It's all good. There it is, 2-0. And Everton are losing in that orange kit. It's a bit like your top, that, Paul, that orange kit they're wearing. Bloody awful. Anyway, early doors. We played some fantastic football. I'm trying to be serious about looking at the game yesterday. And it was brilliant, wasn't it? It was so refreshing. And, of course, it was all up the other end. We couldn't really see how good it was from the away end. But fantastic football. And, you know, it all came together really, really quickly on 14 minutes when there was a move of 21 passes for Mitchell to cross from the left for Eze to score. Now, this was a bit of the afternoon I didn't particularly enjoy, believe it or not, personally. You can ask me, why didn't you enjoy Palace going 1-0 up after 14 minutes?
Yeah, why didn't you enjoy Palace going 1-0 up?
Yeah, well, these glasses that I'm wearing, they came off in the crowd. Boom, boom, boom. And everyone's jumping up and down, hugging each other, going absolutely mental. There were limbs everywhere, and I lost my glasses. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to see the rest of the game. I've got to drive home later. What am I going to do? And I must confess, I didn't hold up much hope for them, in as much as if they fell on the floor, they wouldn't have survived, because nobody would have said, oh, there's glasses. They were jumping up and down. Anyway, they ball's back at the centre circle, and I'm still going, guys, I've lost my glasses. And by this time, Yasmin and one of a few others are going, they're also a bit concerned for me. And bloke in front, row in front, just a few along, he's holding them up in the air going, I've got your glasses. And apparently he caught them. He caught them when we scored. So thanks, mate. He had a retro 1990s tracksuit top on. I don't know what his name was, top bloke. And I kept thanking him. But that was the goal celebration. So I'm not going to forget that goal for a long, long time. And I feel a little bit cheated because I didn't really celebrate it as much as you did, Paul. Did you enjoy celebrating the goal, mate?
Yeah, any goal at Anfield, you go mad at, don't you? And to be honest, it was a great goal, as I say. We were playing the ball around, keeping it away from them. And Eze just had a world of space, didn't he? I quite like watching the TV coverage, because we score the goal and it cuts to Jurgen Klopp and you can see him mouthing, wow. I personally choose to think he was complimenting our play, but he was moaning about the fact that Eze had so much space in the box. But it's nice to see. Nice to see, even if he doesn't mean it, Jurgen Klopp going wow to one of our goals.
Exactly. And how did you celebrate, Tim?
I was in shock, really. It was so easy. I mean, it's great to see on so many fronts. It's great to see Mitchell being more confident to go up, you know, and actually, what a pass, what a run, and what a pass from Mitchell. He looked up, you know, it was quality, and it was such an easy goal. I mean, how many times do you see goals like that scored at Liverpool? Again, we say it, if that was City, Haaland, they'd still be going on about it.
Well, we are going on about it, Nick.
Okay, just from the chat, please. Evening, Mr. Ellicott. I hope you're well. Ladies and gentlemen, John Ellicott's joined us. Great to have you back with us, buddy. He is one of the originators of Red and Blue News, okay? And this show actually wouldn't exist without Lord Ellicott out there. Love to your family, mate. Can I mention the collection on Sunday at Sellers Park for Charlie Ellicott Fund? All monies are going to the Young Lives versus Cancer. Bucket collectors will be around the ground on Sunday. Please chuck in a fiver for us. Okay, I will be there myself, John, and hopefully I'll catch up with you then. And it will be superb to see you, mate, as it was a couple of weeks ago. As I say, love to your family. Ladies and gentlemen, please give generously to the Charlie Ellicott Fund. Can't think of anything better than donating to that wonderful cause. Love to you all, mate. Sorry, Ian. Carry on, buddy.
No, I don't apologise at all. Yeah, wish you well with the collection, John. I hope it goes really well on Sunday before the West Ham game. Okay, so it wasn't long before we were nearly 2-0 up as well. Goodness me. I think it was Virgil van Dijk slipped. Mateta gets in and he gets away well. I mean, he did it so well last week when he scored against Manchester City, but he runs, you know, a good full 30 yards with a ball at his feet. And he probably did the right thing. He just dinks it. And it's on target, but Robertson just manages to get back. And if you've seen it there it is, no goal. It's not the closest one we've seen, but it's right on the line. And a split second later, and it's 2-0. I do wonder how the game would have panned out if it had gone 2-0, whether we would have psychologically thinking, oh, this is easy, isn't it? And eased off a bit. Don't know. I just don't know how it's going to pan out if that had gone in. Any thoughts on that one, Paul?
I was actually discussing this with my dad earlier, actually, because as we were saying, 2-0 is obviously a very dangerous scoreline. But my philosophy on that is you don't turn down a 2-goal lead at Anfield. So especially with the fact that we've gone in the lead in all but one of Glasner's games and only held on once. So when that didn't go in, it was really frustrating because we always need that killer second goal. And you always think at the back of your mind, we're going to regret this. We're going to regret this. And it was just... Yeah, to get a chance like that Anfield when you're clean through, you've got to take those. So, yeah, he did well and he was very unlucky, but you can't miss those chances.
Yeah, you're not wrong there at all.
Nigel's put up the word, mentioned as Paul Bristow saying about stats. Paul, give us another stat from the game before we give Ian a chance to take a breather.
Okay, all right. So this is actually Crystal Palace have beaten Liverpool the last four times. They've all been at Anfield.
About time we beat Marcellos then next season, you know.
Yeah.
There we go. Goodness, mate. I've lost my train of thought now. I was going to say something and it's just gone completely. That's my age. You know, it's happening to me quite a lot these days. Yeah, so we should have been 2-0
That's your age, mate.
Yeah, Robert cleared it off the line. And, yeah, you'd have taken a 2-0, wouldn't you? Of course you would. But you... Do you think that Mateta did anything wrong in that? You know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but should he have put his laces through it? You know, it would have had a different outcome when he would have scored if he did it harder, surely.
It's one of those. It's like a penalty, isn't it? I can't stand people who do these little dinks down the middle. You do it, it goes in, you look really clever, it's a great goal. Yeah. If that had gone in, you'd have been great. In hindsight, yeah, he should have just put his laces through it. But that's the footballer's decision at the time, isn't it? I mean, yeah, you got to know the situation. You know you've got a golden opportunity to go 2-0. Like, you can't miss that. It's a bit like the Liverpool chances in the second half. You can't miss those chances in the situation you're in. And, yeah, he was very unlucky. And, as I say, he was millimetres away. But, yeah, I personally would have liked him to have gone around him or slot it or whatever. But, yeah.
Okay. Nick?
As we're doing stats, Luke Cooper, good evening, mate. Chuck's another one out for us. We're going to do random stats throughout this show. Here's another stat. 7 points from Anfield, Etihad and Old Trafford this season. Great stat, mate. Yeah. Keep, ladies and gentlemen, out in Facebook land or YouTube land. You got any more stats? I'll read them out. Keep going, guys.
Well, I don't know where this is going to steal Paul's thunder for later on, but we haven't lost in on Merseyside or Manchester this season in the Premier League. But we went out in both cups.
The irony, yeah.
Merseyside and Manchester. How ironic is that? There we go. Paul Bristow did put a comment on earlier, just gone through there, and he said we should have been expected to win at Liverpool because Glasner, he didn't win in his first six games at Eintracht Frankfurt. Then he took his team to Bayern Munich and beat them away from home. So it's a similar scenario, wasn't it, really? And apparently he thought we were going to win anyway, so he told everyone. That's the one. That's the one. Thanks, Paul. I didn't see you yesterday, Paul. Were you there, mate? Let us know if you were in the ground. I didn't see you in the away end yesterday. Liverpool then hit the bar. Endo, it was a bit of a scramble in the penalty area right in front of us, and we're all holding our breath, but it comes down off the bar and it gets hacked away, which is great. And then Dean Henderson made an outstanding save from Diaz. It was a cross from Robertson from their left, and Diaz connects really well. It's on target. And somehow he gets a hand to it. I don't think he knew much about it, but it was a brilliant, brilliant save. We've got towards the end of that half, Eze, there was other chances as well, but there's a couple where Eze was involved. He was involved in everything, wasn't he? You know, if you look at the highlights, he was absolutely pulled all the strings for us and was involved in absolutely everything. And he fed Elise into the channel, and Elise's effort was blocked. And I can't help thinking that a more match-sharp Michael Elise would have done better with that particular opportunity. I'm not criticising him because he's just come back from an injury, but it was a brilliant ball. And he just took a touch and it enabled the defender to block. And another one as well where he had a touch and it was just a little bit heavy and the keeper collected it. And I know we're a bit picky here, but I think, you know, a Michael Elise with half a dozen Premier League games under his belt, you know, does better than that. You know, that's the difference. You know, be sharp and just take those half chances to make a difference. And then there was one where Eze crossed it from the left and Mateta headed over the bar, and it was a sort of half chance. And he was complaining that he was pushed, but it was just a nudge, really. There was nothing in it at all. And we're going 1-0 up, and you think, hey, you know, this is pretty good, but it's only half time. It's only half time. And apparently there's been a third goal, according to Dawn Palace. Has Palmer got it again?
Yes.
No.
Show me a look now.
It looks like he has.
He has. Can you believe that?
I think he has. He really has.
That's unbelievable.
That's the first half hat trick in 28 minutes. 28-minute hat trick. So Pickford's got the ball.
Bye, Everton.
Crap ball out of Pickford. Yeah. Who just swings it straight over the top of him into the back of the net.
Jordan Pickford. That's the England goalkeeper. And that is a disgrace.
Supposed to be England's number one.
That's unbelievable.
Absolutely. He's so happy,
is he, Pickford? He's kicked the ball.
Well taken, young man.
Dear, oh dear. We should remember this, Todd. Not only because we're looking back on beating Liverpool, but the other half of Merseyside are getting absolute trouncing in London tonight as well. But there we go. 1-0. Half time, yeah, quite enjoyed the half time break. Actually, I read a bit of the programme and it was all good. Hendo for England, says Mark Callahan. there weren't many of us saying that about 4 weeks ago, were we? Really weren't. And I've said this
exactly.
Before.
Where are all the Hendo haters now?
Yeah, I've said this before when we were talking about positives of this football club, is that we've got two quality England goalkeepers vying for our number one spot. And, you know, Henderson's taking his chance because Sam Johnson got injured. Previously, Sam Johnson took his chance because Henderson got injured. And they've both come in and done a job. And, you know, it's very hard to, you know, you could analyse the qualities they've got, but they're both brilliant goalkeepers. We're fortunate to have them both. Having said that, I can't see us keeping both of them long term. You know, because neither the second choice won't be happy, will they? You know, you can't be second choice at Crystal Palace, or can you? And be happy with your lot. I don't know. Maybe we can come back to that point a little bit later on. Into the second half, Henderson back into action straight away. There was a point blank save from Darwin Núñez. It really was. It would have been harder to miss, arguably, but he hits it at him, but it was a brilliant, brilliant stop. And it was nice to see Shay Given, you know, part of the goalkeepers union, of course, bigging him up on match of the day for his save there. And numerous, or if every single Palace defender and defensive player was putting blocks in and putting their bodies on the line time after time after time. Klein blocked Jota, and Tariq Mitchell right at the end blocked Salah, didn't he? You know, and they all got involved in this, and it was absolutely fantastic. When Jordan Ayew came on, what he did for us, he bought us a bit of time, I thought. He was able to hold the ball up and draw the customary fouls that we see in him. You know, he just does. He's got a knack, hasn't he, of winning free kicks, which is lovely to see. I don't think opposition fans particularly enjoy it when he does that. But he won a few free kicks, and he won one where Eze puts it into the box, and Anderson gets his head on it really too easily. I think heads it down, and Mateta second big chance that he probably should have put away. But it was a bit like Henderson says, Anderson did ever so well, made himself big. And blocks it just 2-3 yards out. And, yeah, you can't really argue with that. If it had been more critical, you'd want him to score those, really. What are your thoughts, lads? Would you criticise Mateta for missing that chance?
I don't think so. I mean, if when it came across, the keeper's literally right in front of him and he's about 2 yards out. So, yes, you'd like to think he would have scored, but it was on target. It was a good connection. And the keeper was just in. It's a bit like with Henderson, with Núñez. He was just in the right place and he managed to get something on it.
Sure. Nick?
Yeah, I'll very, very quickly answer that. Yeah, at 1-0, you're looking for a second goal for a bit of comfort, of course. But yeah, Mateta has changed over the last 3 months. And we're going to be doing, ladies and gentlemen, I can see somebody in there talking about Lerma. Don't forget to talk about Lerma. Don't forget to talk about JP. Don't forget to talk about Anderson. I promise you, as soon as he is concluded, and I've done the other teams, how the other team has done, we're going to do a player-by-player catch-up. I'll give you my...
Okay. Let's fast forward then. XG in this game, Liverpool 2.87, Palace 1.87, the highest XG of any visiting team at Anfield this season. Let that sink in, everybody. That's quite something.
Yeah,
unbelievable, really. So, you know, bodies on the line, as I said, save after save after save. Towards the end, in stoppage time, Jefferson Lerma sort of seemed to pull up, held his hamstring, but he seemed all right walking off the pitch afterwards. So fingers crossed that he's all right, because he's turning into a fantastic baller at the back, isn't he? He's played there out of necessity because of our injury crisis. But aside from the first game, when I think he looked a bit uncomfortable at times at Forest. It was Forest. I think he played there first. Was it, Paul? Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, it was Richards played at Forest, didn't he? So,
did he? Yes, it was the game after that, which was the Bournemouth game then, yeah. Yeah, he looked a bit uncomfortable in that game at times, but I thought he played really well against City, and I thought he played really well at Anfield. And it just looks like he's a natural in that position because his tackling's brilliant, first class distribution. Clearly, as a midfielder, is better as you'd expect. And he looked really comfy there. So maybe he's going to turn into a, you know, part of that defensive three long term. We shall see, of course. 7 minutes of stoppage time. you know, it's always going to be more than five, isn't it? You know, and it was like the Alamo. And what one of the good things from the away end, I don't know if anyone else watching in the chat was there and would agree with this, but I'm glad it was up the other end because I couldn't see how close things were. You know, I said to Yasmin, I said, this is my heart. I can't cope with this. I don't know if I can watch anymore. Whereas if it's up our end, you can see all the mistakes. You can see how close it is. And it's a little bit of a harder watch. And right at the end, of course, well, before the end, a lot of Liverpool fans leaving early. Not quite as many as at the Arsenal, but, you know, quite a lot of them left early. And then the ground emptied quite quickly. But Palace fans stayed behind a good 10 minutes after the final whistle. And you've seen some of the footage, if you weren't there, of the We Love You and the players, you know, applauding the fans. And it was the right thing to do. And Paul, your picture of Anderson standing alone was first class. On our Twitter, we've got, you know, a good number, 100 likes or something on that particular tweet, which is fantastic. So all good. So, you know, all in all, brilliant day at the office, a great away day. And it makes it all worthwhile. You know, we travel length and breadth of the country, week in, week out, watching this team. And we've had some rotten away days, but yesterday wasn't one of them. Nick. Somebody else talk through the stats. There you go.
We commented at the game how many corners they had. Andy Robertson was bending them all in. We had the one. Obviously, they had 11 corners. Apparently, they had over 50 crosses. I'm not sure what the stats class as a cross, but I don't seem to remember that. But no, they had over 50 crosses. I suppose that's a Trent Alexander and Robertson just swinging balls over to each other. But yeah, most teams going to Anfield will only have the less possession. 30% is about right. And yeah, if you're going to win at Anfield, you're going to need to ride your luck and you're going to need most of your players to be 9 out of 10. And fortunately, that's what we had. And yeah, we got the benefit. We got just the first league defeat of the season at Anfield for Liverpool. It's their first home defeat since October 2022. And I think another stat we've got to put up, since Jurgen Klopp has been at Liverpool, they've lost 12 Premier League home games and Crystal Palace have won 3 of them. No other team has won more than one at Anfield in all his time there. So that's quite an impressive stat in itself.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks, Paul. Yeah. Brilliant.
Right. I'm going to move on. Before we do a player-by-player review, because I think yesterday's performance deserves it, and we will do, okay? We're going to look at the other teams. Under-21s, they played on Monday. They played Everton and drew 0-0 at home, and that was in the Premier League 2. Then they played Chelsea on Friday in Premier League Division 1, and that was a 2-2 draw. The under-18s were away at Southampton and ran out incredible 3-0 winners. That was in the under-18s Premier League. And the women, as we already know and we've already discussed, fantastic result for Birmingham to go top of the league. The lone watch, David Boateng came off the bench for Dundee at half-time, while Kylian Phillips stayed on the bench for Aberdeen in a 0-0 draw between the two clubs. Owen Goodman was on the bench for Colchester United, who won 3-2 away at Crawley. Kofi Barmer and John Kamani-Gordon played the full 90 minutes for Wimbledon in a 3-2 defeat away at Swindon Town. I always struggle with his name. Ola Adebomi was not part of the squad for Burton at Albion, who won 2-1 at Stevenage. And Teo Adramola played 81 minutes, and Malcolm Ebiobi was not a part of the squad for John Texas RWD Molenbeek, who won 3-1 against European, whoever they are, in the relegation league. Doesn't make sense. Luke Plange came off the bench and at the start of the second half for HJK Helsinki, who beat Lahti 4-0 on Thursday. So that catches up there. Right, boys, from the back. Okay, we're going to go through very quickly. Just stick your hands up if you want to discuss. Okay, I looked at the player reviews in. I've got the Daily Mail in my hands. Okay, but I looked at it on Sky, BBC Sport, and just looked at the different player ratings. I looked at the Liverpool ratings, and most of them were, as I think it's fair to say, poor. I'm just going to touch on. We're going to kick off first of all in goal, Dean Henderson. They said it was a magnificent afternoon, best encapsulated by an incredible point-blank save to thwart Nunes. Tim, any thoughts on Henderson's performance and what we've got there?
I thought he was probably his best performance for us. He looked comfortable. He looked confident. he flapped a couple of punches maybe, and his distribution probably still needs a bit of work, but the way he was marshalling the defence, the way you could see him talking, his confidence, no, I thought it was his best performance.
That's the word. That's the word, confidence. I said on this on the pod a few weeks ago, there's a good keeper in there. He is a good goalkeeper. He was a bit unfortunate in his first spell. He was in a Roy Hodgson team that was capitulating to every corner that came in. He was playing behind a defence that didn't have any confidence. So it's bound to knock him. And he put in some poor performances, I think, on the basis of that. But he's got a manager now, like most of the players. He seems to be talking them up. He's getting them fitter, confident, and that makes him play better. And yesterday he showed that. He stood up when he needed to. He made crucial saves, as I say, long may it continue, really.
And as Graham Daniels quite rightly points out, it's his first clean sheet for us. Okay, Nathaniel Klein playing on the right-hand side of the three. Very unusual. He said he'd never played there before. And the Mail said, back at one of his former clubs, back with a performance that showed why defending has always been so natural for him, and gave him an A. Ian, how did that get on?
Yeah, it was fantastic. And I think maybe the fact it was Liverpool motivated him maybe that just a little bit more. Because it was his big move, wasn't it? You know, he left us to join Southampton and they paid a lot of money for him. I can't remember how much, but back in the day, it was probably quite a lot of money. He made a name for himself. I think he's got 13 England caps. Someone else, correct me if I'm wrong with that one. He's been caps for his country. And I thought he played very, very well. You know, and but to come into the side when you haven't played a lot of football, a place like Anfield, at that kind of tempo, and do as well as he did, outstanding.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Now we're going to come on to one of the big ones. Joachim Andersen. The guy was imperious. Ian, you and I had a brief conversation on the phone earlier on, and you used the word leader. And I think if I was to encapsulate it, that would cover it. I think it's just outstanding. He was booked late on, but that didn't block his day's work. He works diligently and kept Salah at arm's length. But they only rated him 7. Tim, is 7 fair?
No, not at all. I think what you saw yesterday in Anderson's performance is he's aware that a lot of his performances this season haven't been up to the standard that they may have been in the last season or the season before. And I think he made a statement yesterday. I think he metaphorically held his hand up. And yesterday was a performance that you'd want to see from him. I thought he was outstanding yesterday.
Boys, want to add anything to that?
No, I mean, he clearly enjoyed the performance after the game. It's quite clear. He's obviously still got in the back of his mind. He's had a couple of run-ins with our fans in away games, but he came up to all the players left the pitch. He stayed on there for a good 2 minutes, just standing there with his hands on his hips, looking like some sort of Superman. Before getting clapped off and singing his name off and everything. So he really enjoyed that and he deserved it because, as I say, he was immense.
Yeah, hang on. Ian, before I come to you, mate, I need to correct something that I've just done. I've just read out Jefferson Lerma's. Anderson didn't get booked late on. Okay, it was Lerma that got booked late on. Joachim Andersen towering in the centre of the defence, never letting anything pass him and blocking everything that came his way. They actually gave him an 8. It was Lerma that gave him 7. Sorry, I was reading the wrong line. My apologies. Ian?
Yeah, I think the captain's armband, he stepped up because he knew he had to and he enjoyed that responsibility. And Mark Callaghan said here, Anderson was the leader Jim Cannon was saying we needed. I agree with you totally there, Mark. And he really did have a very good game, and he probably gave Klein and Lerma, who were less experienced in those roles, the confidence to play the game they did. And the number of times he got blocking as well, you know, don't discount that. He played his part, you know, as a foot soldier as well as a leader in getting those blocks in and making sure that Liverpool didn't score. Brilliant, brilliant game. Dean always said Klein's 14 England caps. I was nearly right. 14. 14 is better than 13. There we go. 4-0, apparently.
It's not Palmer.
4-0.
Oh, did he assist?
Who was it?
It was Jackson who scored.
Oh, Jackson was it. This is hilarious. Everton are getting trounced, aren't they? Goodness me. Not even half time, 4-0 down. Oh, dear. What a shame.
Right, moving on to Jefferson Lerma. As I said, he was booked late on and gave him a 7. Now, I think, Ian, you alluded to it in your roundup. Yeah. Lerma's playing in a position that's unnatural to him. But yeah, since he's been asked to do that role, I thought he's done it magnificently.
He's just got better and better, isn't he?
Yeah, and that was a mystery booking. We didn't quite understand that in the game. All of a sudden, the goal is in his own box, and then he gives them a free kick in our half and books him. It was just, I've never seen anything like it.
Well, it must have been descent, wasn't it?
It was descent against the fourth official, or the linesman or something, yeah.
But he must have given the free kick where he said the word, but that was just madness. That was just like trying to give Liverpool a goal.
I've never seen that before, have you?
It was crazy. Fine, stop the game.
It was at our end, wasn't it?
Yeah, stop the game, book him. Get drop ball, keeper, carry on, but don't bring the ball into our half to give him a free kick. It was crazy.
Yeah, it really was.
I mean, Mercy got in.
Yeah, it really looked like the fact the referee was trying to give Liverpool that goal, wasn't it? What else can I do to help you, lads? Mm. I'll put a red shirt on and help you out. But you know what, a ridiculous decision. As I said, I've never seen anything like that ever. If you've seen anything like that in the chat, and you tell us. You know, because I haven't, not in a game like that, right at the end, bonkers.
And I can't stand, I mean, those of you who know me personally will know I've got personal reasons why I can't stand Liverpool or anything to do with Merseyside. And one lot's getting trounced 4-0 and the other lot lost to the mighty Crystal Palace. So I couldn't have had a better weekend. And I came up on the national and I bet that we would win away at Anfield and we did. Boys, I've had a cracking weekend. Daniel Munoz covered miles up and down that flank. He knew he had been in a battle with Robertson, which he had, in fairness, one of which he acquitted himself more than well. But again, they only rated him a 7. How did Munoz do, Tim?
Well, he's a Palace player, so of course he's not going to get more than 7 this year, Anderson. I think, you know, Wharton, Munoz, the difference those two have made to the side and the difference they've had on the other players in the team is becoming more and more obvious. And I think Glasner is part of that as well. I think he's another one where we've got a bargain there. And if he stays, he's only going to get, but is it 7 games he's had? 6-7 games in the Premier League now? 8 games? And look how he's performing. So, very good player.
Paul, give me a stat, please.
Okay, I'll give you a stat. And it's an interesting challenge as well to everyone listening, see what they can tally him up. Crystal Palace have won 6 times in their history at Anfield. I am very fortunate to say I've been at all 6. So I'd be interested to know how many other people have been and how many they've seen there.
Thank you, and well done. Right, now the big one. Adam Walton. Depending on which report you believe, we paid 18 million quid for him or we paid 20 million quid for him. Oh, my good God. What is this bloke going to be worth? Okay. There you go. There's his individual stats. So 2 fouls won, 5 clearances, 5 ball recoveries, 6 tackles, 8 out of 10 ground level duels won, 22 out of 25 passes completed, 100% long ball accuracy, 7.7 they gave him. The Daily Mail gave him 7 and obviously the clean sheet. What have we unearthed here? And you know, everybody that's watching this, listening to this on the podcast, everybody knows my thoughts on Dougie Freeman and, you know, Bolton and all the rest of it. You know that. I've done it. I've covered it a million times. But he has unearthed a real diamond here. Ian, eulogise if you'd be so kind.
Yeah, he looks a real baller, doesn't he? You know, fantastic. And he's so good. You know, he finds passes. He goes forward at every opportunity. He gets the tackles in. Plays in front of the back 5, back 3, whatever you like, and protects them. And he looks fantastic. And it'll be really interesting to see how we fit him in with Decore as well in that sort of defensive midfield role, whether we need both or whether they develop Adam Walton into something else, you know, a 10 or something like that. But he is very, very good. And he's still so young. And it's very early days for him. Dawn Palace is a new Jeff Thomas in the making. Yeah, he looks a bit like young Jeff Thomas. He reminds me a little bit of Jeff Thomas on the ball. And yeah, superb. Yeah, there's no, you know, you lose that, you lose the words. You can't describe them, you know, because there's so many good things you can say about the guy. You know, he's fantastic. But it's early days still. So let's hope he stays fit, keeps his feet on the ground and has a great career at Crystal Palace.
He's a it is early days, as you're quite rightly saying. And Paul, I was going to come to you about Dawn's message there. He said, a young Jeff Thomason, you're old enough to remember Jeff Thomason, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's up and down, box to box. And he's not just that type of player, as Ian says. He's got an eye for a pass. I mean, he played a lovely through ball to Eze up at Forest, which we nearly scored from. So he's starting to be the complete midfield player. He will offer every option in there. And I think the thing that sums his game up yesterday was he looked the best midfielder on the pitch. He's playing Liverpool, who are obviously an outstanding team and have got great players. But he was the best midfielder on the pitch yesterday, and you can't have a higher sort of commendation for his performance than that.
Yeah, I think it's a question of time before he gets, you know, recognition at a higher level with England. Has he actually played for the under-21s yet, or is it just under-20s?
Under-20s, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and I know he's going to be a full international as well, isn't he? No doubt about it.
But I think also what it shows is how well the team are playing as a team. And there was a bit of footage where I think it was in the second half towards the end, and Mitchell came out, made another great block, got the ball away, did really well. And Wharton just turned around and clenched his fist, and you could see what it meant to him. And I think if you look at the players, the way they're playing now, solid. I don't think they did under Hodgson. They're a solid unit now. They're playing for each other. And like whether Glasner, whether they can look, you know, whether them looking at the side and seeing how animated Glasner gets, whether that's, you know, showing, oh, we got a manager who cares, who's involved. It all must, these little things all add up, one on top of the other, I think. Yeah.
Okay, moving on to Will Hughes. I have to say, whilst I thought he had a great game yesterday, when I read this out, you're going to think, God, who is this? Always been a lovely footballer, is what the Mail said. Always been a lovely footballer. So elegant in possession. And this was the case again yesterday, as he kept things ticking over. I wouldn't class him as a lovely footballer. I'd call him your archetypal disruptor. Paul, you go on Will Hughes.
Yeah, he's a niggly midfielder. He's not what they just described him as, crazy. But again, he's one of these. He's come in and he's done a job. I mean, yesterday again he was outstanding. Really, he's played the last few games and he's not played all season, so he's sort of keeping up with the fitness, which is great. But he's what you needed yesterday to win the ball back, to just give it to someone else to then do something with. And yeah, he did everything that was asked of him yesterday, and no complaints.
Yeah, he's definitely
Ian and Tim, any of you want to
add? I was gonna say Will Hughes has definitely improved, I think. He's always been a good player, you know. We've known he's decent. You know, I think when everyone's fit, he's not quite first choice, but I'd definitely keep him as a player for the squad, and I think he can do a job for us. Dawn Palace says he was a lovely footballer at Derby when he was younger. I'm sure he was. But, yeah, for me, he's more of an ugly footballer. You know, he does the ugly stuff. You know, he wins the tackles and, you know, and his distribution isn't bad. He finds the passes, you know, so fair play to him. He's done all right.
So, going back to comparing Wharton to Jeff Thomas, does play for the England full squad, that he doesn't miss that sitter at Wembley like Mr. Thomas did, if you all remember that. Paul Bristow says, on the 25th of March 2024, Wharton received his first call-up for England under-21 team for a Euro qualifying match. He made his debut the following day, coming on as a substitute in a 7-0 win over Luxembourg. Paul, as always, mate, thank you, and thank you again. Top bloke. Lots of contribution. And thank you for everybody else's contribution out there as well. I'm reading them as they go through. Great stuff. I'm also reading the other ones on YouTube as well, boys. So keep them coming, please. So, Tyrick Mitchell, brilliant cross, providing the opening for Eze's goal, but an all-round display to show why Gareth Southgate always has him in his thoughts. 7.5. And Tyrick Duke, Tim?
I thought he had, again, one of his better games. I think it's fair to say that quite a few people have been critical of Tyrick this season, last season and part of this season. His form hasn't been quite up there. I don't know how much that may have been carrying an injury. But again, under Glasner, I think the change playing three at the back, him going forward, I mean, you know, quite a few times the crosses he's putting on are really good. And he's starting to think like that. He's starting to think and try and be that kind of player. So again, another homegrown player. Yeah, I thought he did really well.
Thank you, Graham Morehouse. I can see you. I can see Graham Morehouse coming from Spain. You mate, we're international, and you are coming up as Facebook user. Thank you for giving me your name at the end of it, Ian.
Yeah, he's had two or three England caps. He hasn't been involved in the last few squads because he probably hasn't deserved to be involved in the last few squads. But I agree with Tim. I think it was one of his better games in a Palace shirt. Certainly played very, very well yesterday, defending and going forward. Can he force his way into the Euro squad, given that England haven't exactly got an abundance of riches at left back? What do we think about that?
Southgate has picked him before, so he's obviously, as you say, he's in his thoughts. And Chilwell's not the fittest. Shaw's injured. So there could be a door opening for him. I mean, there's not many other English left-backs you'd think who would be suddenly shooting in ahead of him. So, yeah, he's got a shout if he carries on playing the way he's playing. He's shown he's adaptable as well. He can play as a flat full-back or as a wing-back. So, yeah.
Would that be an incentive for him specifically, do you think? Would he be thinking about that?
I suppose it depends if Southgate's spoken to him. I mean, we don't know what goes on in the background. It may well be. I mean, that may be one of the reasons he's playing better. He's, you know, Southgate might have had a word. Said, look, you know, as I said, we haven't got that many players. Keep doing the way you're doing. And it may be. Good luck to it if it is.
Yeah, interesting. Okay,
moving on to JP then. Jean-Philippe Buntetta, Reddish going to war with Van Dijk and Konate and came up trumped. Deserved a goal for all he didn't end. Really should have had one. Gave him an 8, son. Which, yeah, and I'm delighted with JP. I'm absolutely chuffed to pieces with his improvement. And we're going to encapsulate all that in a minute by talking about the manager. Tim, what were you going to say, mate?
Yeah, I've, as you all know, haven't been his biggest fan. But the last three and a half months, the difference in the way he's been playing is exceptional. He's actually holding the ball. But what I thought yesterday is he didn't get a single thing from that ref. I mean, there were so many times where he was brought over, you know, he was pulled down. He never got a single decision, but he kept going. He didn't stop. And I've got a stat just to finish off. We could be the first and last club to beat Klopp's Liverpool at Anfield.
Yeah, love it. Love it. I love these stats, boys. I'm really enjoying these stats. Have you got, Paul, have you got any more? Not for now, but have you got any more yet?
I might have run out.
Okay. Right, we'll finishing up then. Eze, how did he do? Delivered at the moment that mattered, a calm and composed finish in front of the cop to effectively end Liverpool's title challenge. Rated him only a 7. Any thoughts on... Paul, you go on Eze, please.
Well, yes, I want to take the attacking trio as a 3. They highlighted it on Match of the Day, and I was quite pleased because I said this a few weeks ago on the pod. This new system we've got with our wing-backs is brilliant for those three because it means we don't have to play the wide guys up front. So we're now having effectively 3 up front. And I think Mateta, Eze and Elise together, they showed yesterday, they're such a handful. And the fact that Elise is back is just great because now they can't double mark Eze because they've got to cover both of them. And I think seeing their interplay yesterday, movement. Elise was popping up on the left. There's Eze on the right. That whole system, the wing backs allow this to happen. So they all played great. I mean, Eze was brilliant. He got the ball. He carried the ball. He passed at the right times because he's been holding on to it a bit long recently. He got into the box. The right. We always needed midfielders getting into the box, and he did it right place, right time. Scored a great goal. And as I say, that trio, if we can keep them fit for the rest of the season, there's some good things going ahead. If only we could keep them for the next season.
Tim.
Yeah, the thing that pleased me the most yesterday, and I think it stems from Wharton, to be fair, is again, the press, we pressed in banks. It wasn't just one player or maybe two players pressing. It was going in banks, and I think Wharton pushed that lot. And Liverpool hated it. They couldn't handle it. They did not know what to do with that. And again, Glasner it may be, but it's great to see that kind of performance.
Ian, I'm conscious that I haven't come to you. And what do you give me your thoughts on Eze?
I just want to say about the fact that Eze is still our talisman, but Paul's right, of course. When Elise plays, they can't double mark. They can't triple up on him and all the rest of it. So he's got a bit more freedom. He's got a bit more room. He's got a bit more opportunity to go past people and create things and make them happen. But it's interesting that Glasner's managing his minutes still. You know, he was taken off on 64 minutes against Manchester City. This is Eze. And he was taken off on 77 minutes yesterday. Now, you'd have thought, he's, as our best player, you know, he stays on for the whole game. But no, Glasner's saying, no, I've actually got a plan here. I've got someone else that could come in, take your place. Jeffrey Schlupp, you know, whatever you say about Jeffrey Schlupp, he did okay when he came off the bench, a little cameo, you know, he got involved and the rest of it. He's got players that can do that, and he's saving him. And there was a nice little picture of Glasner with his arm around Eze at the end. And he was talking to him, and he was explaining stuff to him then. So, you know, they're so involved, all the players as well, and everything. You know, they know why they're being brought off. And Glasner, he must be just such a good man manager, which is so refreshing to see.
Well, there was a very interesting interview with Jonathan Gazza on Sky last week, and he is clearly a man manager. And as he's got the players playing for him, as you can see. And I say, he keeps that going, then we won't be far wrong.
Okay, Tim and Ian, you both hit on the next subjects. I'm conscious that we're going to overrun here, boys. Very quickly, John Ellicott says, love the Glasner Res Ball style press on the front foot and willing to hit on the break with bodies going forward in tandem. Absolutely right. John, you're hitting on the subject I want to cover now. Working in triangles, especially the front thing. Bang on, John, as always, mate. On the nose. Okay, guys, what have we got in Glasner here? Number one. Players fitter, question, okay. All departments playing as units, like front three, as you just alluded to. Somebody encapsulate, please, because like I say, I'm conscious of the time. Encapsulate what we've got in Glasner as he's drinking. Ian, go first.
Yeah, I just think a very, very good young manager who's very talented at what he does. He's going to be a better coach than he was player. You know, he's a bit of a journeyman player in the Austrian Bundesliga, but he's already proven that Wolfsburg and Eintracht Frankfurt that he can win European trophies. And I'm not counting any chickens. I'm not saying we're going to win a European trophy anytime soon, though you never know. In a couple of years' time, it could happen. You know, if I was a player at Crystal Palace now, I'll be saying, we've got a manager here and I want to be part of this. And that's what you want. And maybe when it comes to attracting players to add to the squad in the summer, you know, if we lose one or two, that's fine. You know, let's face it, Mark Gahey didn't feature yesterday. He hasn't featured for a couple of weeks now. You know, I wouldn't want to lose Mark Gahey, but if we did lose him for 50, 60 million pounds, it wouldn't be the end of the world. It really wouldn't. And, you know, we've got players that can come in, arguably already there at the club, that can replace a player like Mark. But I think our flair players, like Eze and Elise, we really do need to hold on to them if we can and build around them. And Glasner's the man to do that. And, I can't wait to see what he can do in a pre-season and have a full term at the Premier League. It's going to be brilliant.
Thank you, mate. Very good stuff. Paul, sorry. I want you to cover anything that Ian's just forgotten about.
Well, for me, Glasner's changed our mentality. Under Hodgson, it was always, let's nullify the opposition, let's defend. First interview, he came in, he said, I want to score goals. And the first thing you can see from this team, there's a freedom in the team. He doesn't have a position. He goes wherever he wants on the pitch. And Mitchell, we're trying to get to do the same, and he's beginning to show that. So, yeah, there's a freedom. There's an attacking intent. It's great to see. And as I say, our aim now is to cause opposition problems, and that will help in the long run.
Tim, your thoughts, your closing thoughts, please, mate?
Yeah, for me, the word is potential. I mean, here we've got a manager. We've got an amazing academy, a huge a section of players to pick from, a manager who likes, like Paul said, likes to attack, and he's in a few weeks has turned a team that didn't know how to defend, didn't know how to attack, didn't know how to hold on to a lead when they got one, into the opposite. So if he can do that in a few weeks, give him a year and hopefully some backing in the off season, who knows what we could do.
Great stuff, boys. Really, really interesting stuff. And from my point of view, I'll give you my thoughts. I think he's actually spreading himself all over the squad, all over the staff as well. He's even infecting the fan base with this positivity. Even if we lose two or three of those players in the summer, and we know a couple of them at least will be gone, okay? I've got every confidence that he's got the the contacts, and John Ellicott just mentioned in the Bundesliga that we're going to go out and into the market and bring some of these players in. It's nothing. Please carry on, Mr. Glasner, in infecting that or injecting that positivity into my veins and everybody else's veins, because I think we have got happy days ahead of us. We've had some rough ones. There's not been, you know, some of the football this season has been difficult to watch. I loved what I saw yesterday. I sat on my sofa, just telling out, it was superb. Nigel, what's coming up, please? When's the next show? So we are going to be, I can't remember, anybody? Oh, there it is. We're going to be returning for the West Ham review next Monday, 22nd of April, 8 o'clock kickoff. Be here or be square, whatever you want. Everybody out in Facebook and YouTube land, your contact, your contribution tonight has been as good as it's ever been. Thank you so much. Is no one going to mention your prediction of the 17th position, Nick? Okay, thank you, Rob Donovan. I've seen that comment. I will respond to you in the chat in a minute. Yeah, and you know what it'll be. A very easy emoji. I shall come to that later in the season, no doubt. So we've got West Ham coming up, followed by Newcastle. Oh, stick those back up, Nigel. Newcastle home on the Wednesday. Nigel, you're getting a bit trigger happy there. That's the 24th of April. Then the boat trip away at Fulham, of course, on the 27th. Home to Man United on the 6th of May, 8 o'clock kickoff again on a Monday evening. Then we've got Wolves away, and our last home game of the season on the 19th of May, home to Aston Villa. And then we're going to close the season this year on the Red and Blue Review. Ian, can you remember what date that was that we just decided pre-show that we're going to do it?
Yeah, we're going to do that the following Wednesday. Because you can't do the Monday or the Tuesday.
After the Villa.
Yeah.
All right. So keep that entry. We'll do a full season review where I'm going to get as many of the guys on as we can. Obviously, Jim will come on and Gel will be around, Trees and all the rest of the guys. Ferg, where are you, mate? Get your finger out. We need you on the show. They'll all be around on that Wednesday evening. We'll cover everything else. I think that was something different we did tonight, especially with the player review. And I think it needed covering that player review simply because of the performance yesterday. We're going into this week, folks, on a massive positive note. Let's hope we can end the week on another one against West Ham. Boys, thank you for joining me. Everybody out in the chats, thank you for joining us. On behalf of myself, Nick, and the rest of the team, thank you so much. God bless. Good night. And up the Palace. Good night, everyone.
Good night, guys.
Good night, all.
Good night.